Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Mr. Beacon podcast presents RFID versus Bluetooth with guest Mike Kastner. The Mr. Beacon podcast is brought to you by Wiliot. Scaling IoT with battery-free Bluetooth.
So, Mike Kastner, thanks so much for coming on to the show. I'm really excited to have you for many reasons. We met a few weeks ago, and you've got this amazing background in the RFID space. And for ages, I wanted to do a show about RFID versus Bluetooth. And when we first met, you actually did a pretty good impersonation of someone who had read my book, and you pointed out that it's a Bluetooth beacon book, but we talk about RFID. And the goal of this show and the book was to really give ammunition and a resource to solution designers, which could be a conventional technology architect, or it could be a sales guy or an entrepreneur. And I think figuring out when you're going to use one tool versus another is really central to designing good solutions and being successful. And it's a question, it's a big question, when do I use RFID and when do I use Bluetooth? And so that's what we're going to talk about. And you are absolutely qualified to go toe-to-toe on this smackdown between these technologies, because I think because of your background, because you've worked in Impinj, who are a semiconductor maker, amongst other things. So you've seen RFID from the chip side, and from your time at Mojix, you've seen it from the infrastructure side as well. And you've been a very senior vice president responsible for sales. So you know where it's a good fit and where it's not a good fit. And you've also been responsible for services and making this stuff work. Mm-hmm. So I can't think of a better person to have on the other side of this table.
Well, thank you. And I must return the compliment, as it is an honor to be sitting here with Mr. Beacon, who is the very authority of everything BLE and Beacon technology related. So I look forward to a spirited discussion
here. All right. Okay. And we probably won't come to blows, and we may actually end up agreeing on everything. But I'm hoping there's going to be some disagreement, because that's going to make it interesting. Let's start off by defining terms. So RFID is a big umbrella. And as someone who's kind of new to that world, can you explain to me, what does that umbrella encompass?
Well, there are some variations of RFID technology, and fundamentally you can break them into three different frequency bands by which they operate. So there's low frequency, and solutions there typically run at 125 kilohertz. Mm-hmm. Those solutions have a read range of up to 10 centimeters and have a lower data rate, but tend to be more robust in environments where there's interference from metal and liquids.
So is that like the tags we use to get into the door of our office?
Access control is a very large application for LF or low frequency technology.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Yeah. So that's LF.
Then there's HF.
Right.
And that is high frequency. And the high frequency technology is in the 30 to 300 megahertz range.
Okay.
And systems there typically operate in at 13.56 megahertz. Mm-hmm. Have the benefit of giving you a higher data rate and a bit longer reading distances up to 1 meter.
What about the car keys? What are they?
Actually, that would be HF, the car
HF.
Keys.
Yeah, okay.
All right. And ticketing is a very popular application. Also, near-field communications, or NFC, is a high-frequency or HF technology.
So give me an example of a ticketing application with HF.
Well, your subway tickets that you would purchase and use that for access. It's generally a near-field application.
And so you mentioned NFC, which is typically associated with a tap, but normally the tap is like, you're like literally tapping. You're not doing it from a distance.
That's correct. NFC has its own unique protocols, but it does operate at that 13.56 megahertz.
So we're going up the frequency spectrum. Where's the next stop?
Then you have ultra-high frequency, or UHF technologies, and they operate in the 860 to 960 megahertz band, typically at 900 or 915 megahertz. And they offer, that UHF technology offers the largest read range, typically around 10 meters, although there are some systems that can read it at greater distances. So they have that advantage. The downside for UHF technology as opposed to LF or HF is that they're most susceptible to interference challenges to liquids or reflections in environments where there's lots of metal. However, over time, there have been some nice innovations and that enable there to be tags that can read near metal or near water fairly well in the UHF domain.
Oh, cool. So 800, 900 megahertz, is there any guidance in terms of when a particular band is used? Is it like a regional thing?
Well, actually, yes. So there's the FCC and ETSI really kind of have the difference.
ETSI is Europe.
Yeah, that's correct. Between the 800 or 900 and 915 megahertz. Beyond that, it's one of those two frequencies.
Okay. And I'd heard that 2.4 gigahertz, there's a RFID standard there, but that seems to be less common, right?
That's correct,
And of course, 2.4 gigahertz is where my world comes in, the world of Bluetooth. Although actually, I'd like to say, I feel like I'm trying to make my world much broader because these are like different tools in the toolbox, right? It's not like one's better than the other. Well, but I think one is better than another for a specific application, but it'd be like saying, are chisels better than saws? They're just different tools, and
that's
the key
correct.
Thing is when you use one versus the other. So what is RAIN UHF?
RAIN is an alliance that has been formed to standardize and bring more attention to the EPC Global UHF, Gen 2 UHF protocol. And so it's bringing brand and image to and marketing muscle to the UHF RFID domain.
So let's talk about the readers of this technology. You've got tags and you've got readers. And I'd like to figure out, let's position the difference between a typical Bluetooth reader and an RFID reader. There's more than one kind of RFID reader, though, isn't there?
Yes, that's correct. You have two general categories for readers. There's fixed readers, and there's portable readers. So a fixed reader would be generally fixed in a single position. There's different variations of those types of readers. A very common one is a four-port reader that can read up to four or support up to four antennas. There's others that are in the category of wide area reader systems where you can either network a series of readers together in an overhead grid formation to cover a large space and be able to activate all the tags and read all the tags in that space. One company, Mojix, has the ability to partition the transmit from the receive. So in that case, you are using essentially lower cost antennas to just activate the antenna or the tags and therefore and one or a few receivers to be able to receive the signal. From those. So those are all variations of fixed readers.
So you have the reader, which is the radio.
That's right.
And it could, unlike the world of Bluetooth, where typically the reader and the antenna are intertwined because they're in a phone or maybe they're in a hub, UHF's RFID seems to be a lot more modular. We could have a bunch of antennas up in the ceiling that are all connected to a single reader via coax. Is that how it works?
In the case of the MOGIC system, yes, that's accurate. There are other wide area solutions that essentially use individual readers that are integrated into the antenna and then connect them by power over Ethernet or Ethernet cables in a grid formation. So there's two different approaches that are typically out there for wide area coverage systems.
And if I've got an antenna, if I've got four or eight antennas that are talking to one reader, does the reader know which antenna has seen a tag? Or does it all look the same to them?
It depends on the system, but generally, yes. So when you place these readers in a grid formation, it is possible to develop algorithms that can take advantage of either the radiometric information from the tag or understanding which antennas are firing at different times to approximate the location of the tag. So some leverage RSSI, others use other approaches, but essentially there is a proximity of tag to receive antenna or antenna that's firing that can be used to determine location.
All right. And how big are these antennas? Because my image, in my mental image of these readers, is they're pretty big.
Most readers can leverage a variety of antennas, and so you can optimize a system design to leverage, to control the field of the antenna pattern by leveraging certain types of antennas. But generally speaking, RFID readers, UHF RAIN RFID readers, will leverage a Lotus patch antenna that's maybe 10 inches by 10 inches. There are some array type solutions that integrate an array antenna with a reader, and in those cases, the form factor will be a bit larger.
Does size go with the cost? I'm sitting here, I'm kind of holding on to the fact that I can have a $50 Android phone that can be reading. Obviously, it's going to have, that's portable, so maybe that's not a fair comparison. But if I've got a Bluetooth reader, this will be like a hub from any number of companies, Mist from Coupa. There's a whole bunch of the players out there. Those are maybe a $500 cost for a centralized unit. So it's not the same thing, but it's, how much am I going to be spending if I want to cover a room and invest in the RFID infrastructure?
Well, if we look at jumping a bit ahead as to when you might choose Bluetooth versus RAIN RFID, the fundamental difference is in the cost of the tagging sensors themselves. So,
well, that's where you have a huge advantage. So the cost of the tags is really, really low. And so if we look at pricing out the solution, then it really depends what's going to be the cheaper. But generally speaking, my perception is that the RFID infrastructure is more substantial and it costs more and it takes more to install.
That's right. So RFID reader that is a fixed reader versus a portable reader, could be in, it's in the hundreds of dollars, right? Mm-hmm. It could be around $800, could be, $1,200, somewhere in that range. If it's a wide area system where they're integrating the antenna in and a reader together, then it could be a bit higher. Then you've got to factor in, how many of those readers you're going to need to cover a system solution. Mm-hmm. It could be that you're looking at merely presence detection and you want to place antennas and the readers that drive them around choke points, and you may need just a few fixed readers. It could be that you need tens or possibly hundreds of antennas, and in which case we're talking about a much more involved and costly system.
This is typically coaxial deployment?
In the case of the MOGIC system, they leveraged coax cables to connect the antennas and associated devices back to the reader. Others leverage Ethernet cable, so Cat5 cable for both the power and the control for the devices that are essentially connected together.
So with that, would you be able to leverage the same infrastructure that's being used for the Wi-Fi access points, or are you having a separate?
It would be a separate system, generally speaking, although there are some products on the market that do include Wi-Fi access point.
All right. It's such a diverse market that it's really tough to generalize, but we are going to generalize. And kind of, if we were to take a snapshot now, I think anyone who's doing the mental arithmetic is saying, wow, this is a lot more money than Bluetooth, but we're going to come on to some other things that kind of balance it out later. So, but let's finish off the reader space. So you've given an overview of the fixed readers. You talked about choke points. I guess there's these gateway things. It's another kind of fixed reader that you, I think, alluded to a little bit.
It's a system configuration utilizing a fixed reader.
Right. And if I'm going to have a conveyor belt with a gateway around it, is that, what sort of ballpark is that?
Well, again, it depends on how many read points you need for that particular use case to give you the data that's required. It could get away with a single reader. Could require multiple readers.
Okay. So that's that. Let's talk about the portable readers.
So the other category would be handheld or portable readers. Yeah. And there's a variety of solutions out there. Often they combined a barcode with a RFID scanner into a single device. It could be a standalone industrialized unit. It could be a sled that could adopt a mobile phone as the user interface. It's even possible to purchase attachments for a smartphone that can give you RFID read capabilities.
Seems like that would be quite reasonably priced, quite low priced. But what my sense is that you can spend thousands of dollars on a handheld reader. Why would you go for give us a sense of the price range and why we might go to one versus the other end of that spectrum.
Yeah, so generally in RAIN RFID, the use cases are in industrial, retail, and other places where you may need a ruggedized form factor. Mm-hmm. Also, there is software, value-added software that is bundled and with these devices. So there is more value than just the pure hardware of the reader in many of these devices. So they typically can be in the $1,000 to $2,000 range for a handheld device. But generally, you need fewer of them than you would in a fixed infrastructure scenario.
Is there just a general move to having adapters to go onto Android phones, or is it that need for robustness and all that other value-added stuff that's still keeping the dedicated device market?
Yeah, the Android or iOS, RFID attachments, if you will, for those mobile devices have been around for a while. And they certainly haven't hit mainstream to, my level of visibility there.
Right.
So I think generally in retail, industrial, and other applications, they're using more of the ruggedized or sled approach to portable handheld devices.
So up till now, we've got a technology infrastructure that is significantly more expensive than Bluetooth, I would say. But it has some qualities which kind of the Bluetooth doesn't have. And one of the things that really struck me was I was on a meeting the other day and someone was from the RFID world was asking about Bluetooth because my day job is we have a product that's kind of combining the two. And so they're like, okay, well, so what's the read rate for Bluetooth? I'm like, what is the read rate for Bluetooth? And it's just not something we talk about. We talk about transmit rate all the time in terms of beacons. But read rate is one of the parameters that you guys, it's kind of part of the basic currency and dimensions of a system. So explain to me, what is read rate? And typically, what are the range of read rates that you see, and why is that important?
You know, I think an important distinction to make as leading into that question is when we're talking about beacon technology, we're often talking about proximity.
Yes.
Location and proximity technology, right?
Yes.
Whereas, so in that case, the primary use case or application is knowing when someone in their iOS device or Android device is coming within range of a beacon.
Yes.
Whereas in RFID, the paradigm to think about there is with RAIN RFID, the primary focus is item level tracking of inventory of assets and people.
Yeah.
And in that scenario, the tag detect rate or the read rate is in fact a very important factor for consideration of your RFID system. So if you are looking to replace or improve the inventory accuracy in a brick and mortar retail store, which might be using barcode every 3 to 6 months, mm-hmm. For the purposes of inventory tracking, their average inventory accuracy at any given time could be 70%, 60-70%. Mm-hmm. But with RAIN RFID, you have the potential to get that accuracy up into the 98-99% accuracy. Now, in RFID, and as I mentioned earlier, RAIN RFID, being ultra-high frequency, is more susceptible to interference. And therefore, if you think about a typical retail environment or a warehouse, there could be many points of reflection, things that can, metal and other things that can cause multipath signals. And in that environment, you can have tags that are find themselves in an RF null, where you're not able to read that particular tag at that given time. Now, it could be that someone walking by is enough, just that factor is enough to change the RF dynamics so that you're able to read that tag at a different instant, or people may be shuffling through inventory. But this is, when people are talking about what is the read rate of Bluetooth or what is the read rate of RFID, this is these are the factors or the considerations that they're concerned about.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So read rate is basically how many tags can my reader read in a second, and it seems to me that, correct?
Or how many tags am I able to read at all, right? In the scenario I just described, okay, where a tag could be in a null, it may not be readable for hours.
Well, let's make sure that people really understand what this null is. So we kind of think of these radios as broadcasting out this sphere of radio radiation.
Yes.
But that's actually not how it works. And in the book, we have a picture of a delicious powdered donut as a way of explaining how this works in the Bluetooth world, right, where it's kind of this Saturn type, well, it's donut shaped. And so if we're looking through the donut, you can see nothing. So if there's a tag that is attached to a piece of apparel, a sweater, a jersey that's on a shelf in a store, potentially the reader's up here and the hole in the donut is pointing right at it. And what you're saying is actually we tend to think about multipathing and interference as being a bad thing, but maybe that will work for us in some cases, where the signal that might not have been detected by the reader is going to bounce off someone that is walking past in the part of the donut that's solid, and it will end up being read by the reader.
That's correct. What you have to keep in mind is in RAIN RFID, there's no power source for the tag. So the tag is entirely reliant on capturing enough signal strength that's transmitted from the reader to power up that tag and have enough energy to send a signal back to the reader. So if you, in some reader systems, they're more susceptible to any interference that could occlude maybe the direct line of sight, if you will, of that RF signal. And if there's a metal barrier between the tag and the reader itself, it's going to cause reflections. And maybe there's enough reflected energy that gets to the tag to wake it up and send a signal back. Maybe there's not. It could be the case that with the multipath signals that you have, just like a sinusoid, the signals actually working against each other and canceling each other out, and you're not going to get any RF signal to that tag in that particular spot. You could move it over just a few centimeters, and there it's all of a sudden it's out of that null, and it's enough to wake it up.
So the reader is providing the energy. Yep. So it needs to have a bunch of batteries associated with it, or to be wired into the power through the coax or whatever the cabling is, so that it can send out a carrier wave, just a strong signal. And then it'll get backscatter, will essentially reflect back the signal to the reader. And for this reason, what's the benefit of that in terms of the tags?
Cost.
Okay.
Right? And no battery source. Now, we didn't talk at the top of the show about the fact that there's active RFID, which would have its own transmitter and power source. There's passive, which I just talked about, and in the context of RAIN, we're talking about passive tag. There's also a category called battery-assisted passive, which does have a battery in the tag, but it basically only it uses that battery when there's an RF signal from a reader in the range, and that can help extend the range. But going back to our point of discussion here,
so we've got active, passive,
battery assisted, passive,
battery assisted,
passive.
Okay, and that can be used for like keeping sensors going.
I'll keep that
and
out.
So
it's a detail we don't need to get into.
We'll move that to the side. That's another show.
Yeah.
So let's get back to the price of the tags. They're cheaper.
Oh, that's what it was. Yes.
They're cheaper because there's no batteries.
Right. Right. Exactly.
And they can be smaller. And the actual production process is.
That's
is
right.
different. You don't have a printed circuit board. Bluetooth, we have a printed circuit board, we have a chip, we're
right.
soldering things together.
That's right.
There is no soldering. You guys are gluing your stuff together.
Correct.
It's being spat out of a big Mollbauer machine, which is like quite expensive, but basically like a huge photocopier that's producing these things at an incredible rate.
Yeah.
So the cost is lower. How low is low?
Well, we're talking about a simple label tag where you're basically sandwiching a RFID chip and an antenna between a label and an adhesive surface. We're talking about pennies, right? With no battery to maintain over time or change.
So if I'm buying like 1,000 of these, can I get them for like 15 cents, 12, 15 cents, if I'm buying 1,000?
Probably, that's right, yeah.
And if I'm buying millions and billions, then I'm guessing I can...
Well, sub 10 cents or later.
Yeah.
That's right.
I've heard sub 5 cents for the people that are buying billions. There's a few retailers that are in that kind of space, and there's a few CPG companies.
One of the advantages of RAIN technology, right, is because it's a passive technology, you can leverage just the chip in a simple label. You can attach it to a substrate. You could package it any way that you want for a specific use case. So there are hard tags out there for industrial purposes that could take an AK-47, right? They're hardened. Now, those tags may be, $1 to $3, right? So it's more of a function than the packaging than it is the silicon costs or even the antenna technology in most cases.
So the way you framed it, I think, was kind of probably the way the Bluetooth industry and the RFID industry, I think, had kind of staked out their camps, and RFID had really gone into the asset tracking, and Bluetooth was about stationary beacons and location, and your phone's waking up, it sees the beacon, you can do wayfinding. And in my mind, hands down, Bluetooth is superior for that proximity marketing where you're talking to a handset. But things have changed, and actually the Bluetooth industry is now moving from just beacons to tags, so things that move and are attached to mobile assets. And I think our Bluetooth industry is seeing this huge pot of gold and the value of getting into the asset tracking space. And maybe we don't quite know what we're getting into there. So I'm going to put a stake in the ground, and I'm going to say Bluetooth is clearly superior in terms of that proximity use case where someone's got their phone and they don't have any sleds or anything, and they just want the phone to see the beacon. It's going to wake up their app. Would you give me that?
I would give you that.
Okay. So, but now we're moving into the Bluetooth guys are getting greedy, and they're seeing all this prospect of not just selling a few hundred beacons, but thousands of beacons, and now they're mobile, so we're calling them tags. So, you know, what is it that we don't know? Where is it that you think that Bluetooth is weak in that environment?
Well, if we're talking about presence or location tracking of assets, right, then you need something to collect that information. Mm-hmm. And in RFID, you have readers, either it's an active or a passive solution. In Bluetooth technology, we're looking at BLE beacons, right, that can be, I think there are people looking at leveraging that in RTLS applications. Mm-hmm. But again, if you need to record the location of multiple assets in a physical area, right, mm-hmm. then there's something that needs to read that information. It's not a matter of I'm transmitting a signal and you've come into range of the signal.
Right.
Right? That does it. So you mentioned earlier in the podcast, Quipa, if I pronounced that correctly.
Quipa,
right?
They're having an
innovation, right? And they're able to accurately determine the location of a beacon.
Yes.
But what did you also say? You said that they have a fixed infrastructure device that would be equivalent to a reader.
Yes.
You said it was around $500.
Yes.
So now we're talking about that being somewhat in the range, right, of a fixed infrastructure RFID reader.
Yeah.
Okay, then on top of that, you have the cost of the beacon or the Bluetooth device itself.
Yep.
So if we're looking and comparing that to RAIN, where we simply have a chip on a piece of and a label, and it costs pennies, you're talking about a printed circuit board and a power source reliability issues related to all of those things over time, and you have replaced batteries and a cost factor.
Yeah.
So I don't doubt that there are some use cases that you can look at where maybe finer precision of the location, or maybe to the need to be tracking high assets that are moving at high speed, where a solution like this Quipa might be preferable, and I'm sure there are going to be other innovations. So I imagine that there's going to be some space for BLE beacons in RTLS and in other asset tracking spaces. But without a doubt, RAIN RFID is going to maintain its place where the number of assets that are being tracked in a given area is high because of the lower tag costs. And because there are a number of ways to skin the cat in terms of tracking those assets. You can have two or three handheld devices, and that may be all you need for scanning an entire retail store or an entire warehouse. You can set up choke points as tagged assets travel from one point to another point, it generates an alert, and you now know it's in a new zone. Mm-hmm. And you could have a full wide area system where you the nature of that real-time reading of tags has distinct value. And understanding the location and the movement of the location, understanding being able to track state changes of those assets in software, where there's clear value in a more expensive infrastructure-based solution.
Yeah.
Right? So there's you don't necessarily need to assume that because a reader may be $800 or $2,000, that the infrastructure costs are going to be prohibitive in an RFID solution. Now, if you just have a very few number of assets, right, in that type of scenario, a beacon approach may be, in fact, a lower cost approach.
Right? Yeah, I think that there's clearly a spreadsheet you could build that looks at that, the proportion of the tag cost versus the infrastructure. Now, I'm going to assert that the BLE infrastructure is a lot cheaper because it isn't just your $500 readers, and there's a range. There's Fathom is another one of the players in that space that I was searching for, and so their price range I would say goes from maybe $300 to $600. But you also have this other class of reader from companies like Contact.io, and who knows, maybe even Estimote, where they're basically talking about less than $100 for a reader that can read these tags. So I'm going to say that it's generally speaking a lot cheaper, and the accuracy varies significantly, and I think that's one of the things where you have to look at individual providers on both sides. But I'm going to assert that getting high accuracy from Bluetooth is something that it's reasonable now, but it's going to get a lot better as angle of arrival technology, which Cooper use and other people claim they use as well. It's going to be in the Bluetooth standard this year. That's what we expect. And so I think there's going to be just this incredible, highly accurate, real-time positioning of assets, and there's a modest number of them, then clearly Bluetooth is the way to go. But if you want very high performance reading a very large number of assets, then I would concede that RFID is in good shape, because you guys do talk about read rates in the thousands per second, and we don't even have that. I bet you if you looked in the spec sheet of most of the Bluetooth hubs, they wouldn't say what the read rate is, because they just don't think about it in those terms. They're not thinking about tracking sweaters in a Benetton or a retail environment like that. Okay, we didn't get the fisticuffs. Let's see. So, but it's probably time to summarize. So it seems to me, looking at what you guys have been doing in RFID, you actually have better RF characteristics, because the spectrum you're using has better propagation. Maybe there's some issues because of the low power nature. Maybe we can win a little bit in the Bluetooth world where we have a strong battery. So there's maybe some advantages there. I would say the ecosystem of providers in the Bluetooth world is pretty amazing, because we're starting off with handsets that are being sold in their millions. And I think these lower cost hubs are really going to take off. But I can't predict the extinction of the RFID business. I actually think that that's going to grow. Where do you see RFID going? Is RFID flourishing or is it stagnant?
No, it's absolutely flourishing. I mean, what I've observed is a steadily raising tide of the adoption of RAIN RFID in a very large number of industries, and an infinite variety of use cases. I mean, generally it boils down to tracking inventory, assets, and people. But if you look at the creative ways that are being used to deploy RFID in healthcare, in logistics, in manufacturing, in the energy sector, in retail, in libraries, it goes on and on and on. Without a doubt, you just see more and more adoption continuing, so we don't see that slowing.
Well, I think this has been a great start to the conversation and the debate about where to use one technology versus another. So, Mike, thanks very much for coming in, and helping us get a bit smarter about that. One thing I do predict is that there's all sorts of things that we won't have covered, and that there's going to be really smart people out there that will want to tell us that. And I welcome that on the YouTube channel, on Twitter, on Facebook. People should chime in and tell us where we missed something and where the gaps are. And it's a fascinating subject.
Thank you very much, Steve.
So we have two drummers in the room, you and Don.
That's right.
So no shortage of musical interest. Have you been able to get down to the three songs that you would take to Mars?
I have, and thank you for asking. I think it's wonderful that you end every show with this question. It's a topic near and dear to my heart. So I thought about it and came up with the three that I would take on a mission to Mars. I think that's right. That's what we're looking for here. So the first would have to be a song from the artist that I've probably listened to more than any other artist in my lifetime, just in terms of over the decades, and it never gets tired to me. And that's a jazz artist named Pat Metheny. I'm sure most people know who that is, or many people do. And there's something about his music that really appeals to me. It's great background music, so I can have it on while I'm working, right? Yeah. And of all of his songs, I would choose the song First Circle. And that song features an artist that he has in the band that sings vocals, but as though there's no words, no lyrics, it's as though it's an instrument.
All right.
And that particular composition evokes a very positive spirit, a lot of high, great energy. And that vocal, as an instrument that I just described, is something that if by chance I should encounter any extraterrestrial life forms, it might give. I'd like them to communicate the soul of the human spirit in a way that they could understand through that music.
So they don't need the vocabulary, but they'll get the essence of the human spirit from that vocalization.
Right.
I first started listening to Pat Metheny back in the mid-80s, early 80s. I was in college, and I got into this habit of playing it after parties, and so my friends said, oh, this is your hangover music, isn't it?
Right. So there you go.
It's meaningful to me, too. Okay, so that's number one.
Number two, I had to pick a song that would evoke the raw spirit and anger and energy of rock and roll to the core, right? And there's a million considerations, but I ended up with God Save the Queen by the Sex Pistols.
Fantastic.
Nice and raw and energy, and then I have to have that with me.
Yeah.
And then for the third selection, given that I can only bring three, I figured I should pick a song that would take an entire album side or longer, so that at least I could get the most music out of my my mission. And so I started thinking about, okay, what songs do I really like that would consume an entire album side? I considered Mountain Jam by the Allman Brothers Band. Mm-hmm. Has a drum solo in it, so that would be cool. And in fact, I think that's two album sides. I considered Close to the Edge by Yes, but I ended up with another one of my favorite bands growing up. I loved prog rock, Genesis, so I'd pick Supper's Ready by Genesis, if you know that song.
All right, so that was that early Genesis
early
with
Genesis.
Peter Gabriel.
That's correct.
All right.
That's correct. Although I choose the version on the live album Seconds Out, which has Phil Collins singing. So there you go.
Fantastic.
There's my three songs.
And I just got to ask you about the Sex Pistols. As a drummer, do you listen to their drumming? The drumming, I can't remember the name of the drummer, but was he any good, or was it just like raw enthusiasm?
You know, the thing about punk music is it was the first form of music that you didn't have to be good to be wonderful.
Yeah.
And that's what inspired so many kids to do it, because they realized, I just need to have the spirit and go do what I can do, whatever that is, with no technical chops whatsoever, and make great music. It's all about the anger and the energy. So there you go.
Ah, well, I spent the weekend listening to interviews with and music selected by a guy called John Peel, who people in this country probably won't know, but he was the Radio 1 DJ, which was at the time the only national radio station. He was the Radio 1 DJ that broke the Sex Pistols. He also broke David Bowie and Pink Floyd.
Yes.
And it was, I would so admire him, because he was like all into this long hair stuff, and then punk came along and he just switched and he completely jettisoned his old audience. And he was an older guy, but he just recognized that raw energy, and he loved it. And so I've got so much respect for him. Very good. Thanks for your three songs.
Thanks for asking.
All right.
The Mr. Beacon podcast is sponsored by Wiliot. Scaling IoT with battery-free Bluetooth.